And away we go here on this Thursday, October the 31st, 2019. It is Halloween morning, 13 minutes past the hour, coming up on 14 minutes, and we have got a great program today and a great host of programming all day today here on WWGH Radio. I'll be on through 10 o'clock this morning, and then Marion's radio legend Charlie Evers will be in. And today, I believe his guest is James Anderson from the Park District. Here in Marion, the Marion Tallgrass Trail, and I'm sure James will have a lot to talk about in regard to that. I know those are popular programs. And then from 12:15 to 1 today, Glenn Coble will be in with Swap Shop, which is a place where you can buy and sell your items for free. Just call the number 740-383-9944 from 12:15 to 1 today. Talk to Glenn and join the Swap Shop program. From 2:10 to 3 p.m. today, we have the Adam the Computer Guy show live here on the station. Something always interesting to listen to. Now, a few programming notes here before we get to our first guest. Coming up in hour number two this morning, a little after 9 o'clock, it's Halloween, so what kind of guests would you have on? Well, the only person who would fit on Halloween, he was a regular guest on the Johnny Carson Tonight Show, the late show with David Letterman, and many others. Sally Jesse Raphael, if there was a talk show, Merv Griffin, this man was on it. And joining us via telephone this morning, a little after 9 o'clock, will be world-famous mentalist The Amazing Kreskin, live from New York. So don't miss that coming up later on this morning. And then, on the tail end of the show, I believe we have some Halloween trivia where you can learn about this day. Now, we're going to start off the morning here, hour number one, talking about a very important subject coming up, which, by the way, I do want to mention this because I don't think we've done this. We here at WWGH on Tuesday, Election Day, I believe we'll be providing the only comprehensive nonstop local election coverage. We'll go live at 7:15 on Tuesday night, and as I have it right now, I will be in studio with Sean Kraft and Terry Tackett. Linda Sims will be stationed at the Board of Elections. Glenn Coble will be at Democratic headquarters. And Mike Wilson will be at Republican headquarters. And we will not break away. That's what we mean by comprehensive coverage. When we start at 7:15 on election night, we will not go off the air. We will not take any breaks until the night is over, until all the elections have been called. So 7:15 on election night, and we'll have people stationed all over town and here in the studio, and a special guest in studio who I can't tell you about yet, but I won't tell you about him until election night, so you just got to tune in at 7:15 to see who's going to be here. And we may have people coming in and out that night, which leads to our subject this morning in hour number one, because there are some levies on the ballot this time, aside from elections that involve city council and the mayor and so on and so forth. There is a capital improvement levy, fire levy. And this morning, coming in to explain all that to us, and we're so glad to have him on the program, he is the fire chief at the First Consolidated Fire Department, Clint Canterbury. Clint, how are you?
Good morning, Scott. Doing great on this wet morning.
It's Halloween. This is the weather we always get on Halloween.
Exactly.
Now, Clint, a capital improvement levy. Tell us about this.
Well, Scott, in 2009, we passed a capital improvement levy to purchase apparatus. Back then, the fleet was really aging. Most of our apparatus were tickling 15 to 20 years old. So we asked the voters back then to put a 1 mil capital improvement levy on to specifically purchase apparatus. And we've done that. We've purchased a rescue engine. Of course, I don't think a lot of the people understand that the fire trucks nowadays cost, you know, $700,000, $800,000. And that's not a Lamborghini by any means. That's kind of a run-of-the-mill fire truck. So, you know, moving forward to 2019, we have a response issue. We have a time travel distance issue because, as you may know, First Consolidated covers about 110 square miles, practically all of eastern Marion County and into Morrow County, and a lot of people don't realize that either. So when you're stationed out of Caledonia on the eastern edge of the county and you got to come clear to Meyer, or you got to go clear to Iberia, that's a big difference. And you know, our response times to Myers averages about 14 minutes. So if you're hurt at Myers, call 911. If we're Johnny on the spot 14 minutes later, so to speak.
How did we get that way?
Well, you know, development comes. So I guess to go back in the beginning, the history that I know from past chiefs, especially Chief Jess Mowry, he's real big on history, and I'm a history guy, that you got to know where you come from to know where you're going and to be a part of the program. So, you know, Caledonia was contracted to Clarendon Township, Caledonia Village Fire Department, back in the 50s and 60s, and even before that, I'm sure, was contracted to Clarendon Township, Scott Township, Tully Township, and Canaan Township in Morrow County. So as time went on, each township paid a different fee for the Caledonia Fire Department to provide the service to those outlying areas. And over time, some things had changed, like when the Army Depot was gone during the war, they contracted to like Marion Township or Marion City during those times. And they had their own fire department as well. But as you go on, in 1970, Chief Mowry thought it would be good if everybody paid the same taxation. So that's when that's how we got our name. We were actually the first fire department in the state of Ohio to consolidate under the taxation laws to be able to levy money as a district. And then in 1974, they changed the laws to that can cross county lines. So that's how we encompassed in Canaan Township and Morrow County and expanded even more. And it's not so much as that we were growing or expanding, there's just nobody out there, so to speak of, you know.
Now, how would passing this levy help that problem in specific?
So like I ran into a gentleman in Menards the other day in uniform buying supplies, and the gentleman asked, you know, why has Caledonia come clear to Menards? And I said, well, it's just the township border. You know, we can't do nothing about that. And I like to say, I didn't ask Menards or Myers to come. We inherited Menards and Myers to come by just growth of Marion, which is a good thing, correct? Mm-hmm. But when those people come, they understand those logistics too. I mean, those people are professionals in doing what they're doing. So what it is the levy is going to do is it's going to allow us to put a station at the corner of, just south of the corner of 95 and 98, which will put us roughly 3 minutes from Myers or the hotel, Best Western, which is our furthest west facility. The levy being a capital improvement levy in 2009, and that's why we did this. We want to let the people know, number one, the capital improvement is to build the station, to put 6 full-time guys there, and to put an apparatus there. And that will forever do that. You know, I've had questions on why a continuous levy. Well, apparatus is forever. And as I say, when you're paying $100,000 a year payment on an apparatus, that's not getting you the Cadillac at all. It's truly not. And when you see the prices of these fire trucks, I mean, even myself being in the business for 25, 26 years, I have to sit down because it's a lot to take on. And then the wages. When you hire somebody full-time, when I'm hiring, you know, a 21, 22-year-old young man, he has to have a 30-year career. And that is forever in my mind. We're going to fill that position forever, because once the service is established, we don't want to go backwards. So the station would be located in an area that encompasses a 6-minute response time to 53% of our calls, which is huge. Because right now, where we're located in Caledonia, 53% of our calls is 11 to 15-minute response time. So over half of our calls has an unacceptable response time. And as I said in the newsletter we sent out to all of our residents, you know, we can have the best equipment, we can have the best training, we can have the best of everything, but I can't change travel distance. And when you have a loved one, a friend, whatever, call 911 because you're shopping at Myers and you fall down and break your ankle, or God forbid, have a heart attack. It's 14, 15 minute response time. I can't change the time distance we travel. And that's the goal of this levy. And that's why we're trying to reach out and say, hey, we hear you. We hear the complaints to our residents, to our visitors, to the people who work, the people, and I say the people who play, because we do cover all of River Valley School District. And that school district has a daily population of about 2,300 people, which is amazing to me. You know, all four schools, the teachers, and that's not including visitors, Scott. Mm-hmm. So those are the people I consider that are playing, right, or schools. It's 12, you know, 11 to 15 minutes. That's a long time to sit there and hold a hand to somebody that's hurting.
Well, it's a big issue, and it's been a big issue for a while, and I think all of us who live in that area have realized it over time. How hard is it to get the word out on something like that? In this day and age, where we have social media, where we have internet, but we still have mailers, we still have these ways of knocking on doors, how hard has it been going into this, or has it been easy?
Well, I don't think it's ever easy, because I don't think it's not easy trying to tell someone you want to raise their taxes to do something. We live in a world today where everything is government this and government that. I like to think we're different, because when you vote for a levy, you're seeing the benefits of that levy. You know, we don't go to Myers and buy something and then don't put nothing in our cart. And that's a lot of times we seem like we're doing that to our state and federal governments. But when it's a local fire department, and it's any fire department in Marion County, Scott, whether it's the city, the county, it doesn't matter. When you vote for something, I promise you, you are going to see some return on your money, physically see it. And then, like this levy, you're going to get a quicker response time. We're going to get more manpower and quicker response time. You read it in the newspaper every day. We hear Marion City Fire Department saying they need more manpower. Marion Township needs more manpower. The volunteer departments, we're struggling. We're struggling big time in Marion County for firefighters in general. We can't compete with Delaware County. When Delaware County's paying, you know, $16, $18, $20 an hour for part-time employees, firefighters, Marion County cannot compete with that, Scott. We only pay our part-time firemen $12 an hour.
You know, that's a misconception that I had a conversation with somebody about not too long ago, was that, boy, and I can't speak for the police, but, boy, the police and the fire just make big money. Big money.
Yeah. Well, and again, I think it's a perception. You know, the firemen, you know, they work 24-hour shifts. And so they work one 24-hour, and then they're off 48 hours. So in reality, they only work 10 days a month at the fire department. And, you know, and I don't know exact wages for the city and the township, but for First Consolidated, you know, if we're making $45,000, you know, tickling $50,000 maybe a year, they only work 10 days a month. Most firemen you probably know have second jobs or have their own business or something like that. So it's a perception thing. When you see that fireman driving that fancy car, it's not all the fire department, for sure. It's their hard work ethic that they do on their off days, as well as the fire department. You know what I mean? It kind of combines it. And so I think it's a perception. But, you know, the community service aspect of it, you know, we risk our lives every day. The men and women in this county risk their lives every day to provide a service. And sure, today might be a TV day, Scott, and I'll never deny that. I was on truck for many years, but I tell you, tonight, when your child is in that house and we're coming to get you, there's a lot of stake on the table at that point.
Well, I think people would be shocked to know that a part-time fire person makes $12 an hour because, I mean, it's we know what the minimum wage now is. You know, it's on the upside of $8. We know that if you start at grocery stores and fast food restaurants, now a lot of times you can start in at over $10. And, you know, those are good and honest jobs, but you're not risking your life. Right. For $12 an hour.
Absolutely. And that $12 an hour is, that's the top of the paramedic and 240-hour trained firefighter. If you're just a basic EMT or a lower-grade fireman, you know, you might be lucky to be making $11 an hour. And when you say, you talk to people and you run into people and you ask them and they ask you about it and you say that and they're like, well, that ain't enough. You know, and in return, when they say, well, that ain't enough, those people don't realize, well, in order for them to make more, it's more tax dollars, you know, because it's a levy. We're tight budget. I'm very proud of our budget. We have a lot of equipment. We have a lot going on for First Consolidated. But no matter what chief you put here, they're going to tell you they have a lot going on, no matter what fire department sits here. And today, we are working together better and more today than we have ever had in the 25, 26 years I've been doing this. So not everybody's buying the bigger trucks and, you know what I mean? We're buying less because we're doing more together. And truly, that's what needs to happen countywide.
Now, the brass tacks of this, on November 5th, when people go to vote, I think there are two questions here. We'll start with the easier one first. Who votes? Because this is an off-year election. There's really nothing on the state ballot that's of huge importance. There's nothing really on the national ballot. So that usually means lower voter turnout for an election like this. If you wanted to vote for this and you were thinking, well, why am I going to vote? There's not a whole lot going on. I mean, I live in the county. I live in this district, and there's not going to be too much on my ballot this time because I don't live in the city. Who votes on this?
Well, I'd like to think our supporters are voting on this. Right. The people that see the need, Clarendon Township in general, if you live west of 98, it directly affects you, you know, 15 minutes versus 6 minutes or 4 minutes. And if you live in Scott Tully Townships, it directly affects you because currently we only have two pieces of apparatus in service, a squad and an engine. And so when we are at 53% of those calls west of 98, and we get a call to the Martell area, it's going to take us 15 minutes to get to you because it just, or more, because we just drove 15 minutes to get the mire. So it affects everybody. And again, I would think anybody that's ever used our service, has crossed paths with First Consolidated, generally knows we are a good program. We're a great program, as a matter of fact. And we've done as much as our ISO rating. You know, I get questions because we have three fire stations, and I don't even know if you know that, Scott. We have three fire stations. Two are volunteer stations, and those stations were specifically put in place to lower our ISO rating. We were a Class 5 fire department in 2007 and 8 when I took over command of the department. And one of my goals was to lower our insurance rating for your homeowner's insurance. And the only way you can do that is to lower an ISO rating. They control your homeowner's insurance rates. So we set out a mission. Tully Township gracefully built a bay onto their road garage, and we put a fire truck up there. And we have volunteer guys that live in the eastern part of the district. If we get a fire call or a call in, they go to that station, grab that truck, and go to the call. And then in 2010, as you know, we acquired the U.S. Army Reserve Center there at Pole Lane and 309. And we acquired that for nothing. It was free, with the stipulation that it can never be sold, and it always had to be for public safety. So as we've went through the years, we originally wanted the dispatch center there. We wanted, you know, there was all kinds of things what we do with it. However, we maintain it. It's a training facility for the departments around the county. We host annual trainings there. We have an engine there. We have our boats there. We have our generators there. So there's four pieces of apparatus there, actually five pieces of apparatus there. So those, what that does for ISO, it puts a fire station within 5 road miles. If you're within 5 road miles of that station, you are now a class 3 fire department, which going from a 5 to a 3, that's ISO really put the magnifying glass on us, because that was jumping 2 classifications, and I don't want to say it's unheard of, but it was a special situation where we went from 5 to 3. We are the only county fire department that is a class 3. Marion City is a class 3, and I'm really proud of that. And people say, well, I got a fire station at Pole Lane and 309, and like yourself that lives down around the Pole Lane area, but that station's not staffed. And then I get the questions of, why don't we staff the station? Well, it's a 1960 building, so we can start there with the number of renovations that it would take, the garage, so to speak, of is not attached to the building, and so it would take some extensive remodeling. Plus, it's right on the edge of our district. Pole Lane's our cutoff. And so when you look at the 5 road miles that it affects, or the 53% of the calls for the 5 road miles, it really cuts down, because it's from Pole Lane East, because it has no effect on Pole Lane West, because it's not our fire district. So by moving the new station out at 95-98, our 5 road miles is now 10 times greater, which encompasses the 53% of our calls to a lower response time to 4 to 6 minutes.
One of the things that always amazes me when it comes to voting, election day, I think a lot of people don't understand what a mill is. I think a lot of people don't understand where the money comes from. Does it come from sales tax? Does it come from property tax? Where do these taxes come from? And if you own a home that's $100,000, how much money are you going to be paying a year? Is it quarterly? How is this levy set up?
It is a property tax. in a mill, so a lot of people think we just ask the auditor for a millage. Mm-hmm. You know, we want X mills to run the fire department. It truly doesn't work that way. We have to estimate the budget, and then we would go to Joanne Casotas and say, we need $600,000 to do what we want to do. And then she evaluates it. She does her calculations, whatever. And then she comes back and says, you need a 3 mil levy. So the 3 mil levy means it's, and I'm going to quote this, and I'm not 100% sure, but it's like a penny on a hundred, basically, is what a mil is. And so, like you say, if it's a 1 mil levy, no matter where you live, you're going to pay about $36 per mil for that levy, no matter if you live in LaRue, Caledonia, Prospect, or Morrill. It's 1 mil is what you're paying, is 36 and some change.
Now, is that when you pay your property taxes, that's where you'll see it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that number was on a $100,000 home, which typically that's what the auditor's office gets us as a starting point, the average $100,000 home.
Now, is that per year?
Per year.
So $36 on $100,000 per year is where this would set.
Correct.
Yeah. That's interesting.
For a 1 mil levy.
For a 1 mil levy.
Correct.
And obviously people who rent, because a lot of people do, they don't really see any change, I wouldn't imagine.
Well, that's one hand, I think you're right, and then the other hand, I would disagree, because if I'm the homeowner and you're the renter, my taxes go up on the home $36. I could raise your rent $36. I hate to say that, but I mean that's the life. You know, I'm not going to, as a homeowner, keep taking the hit on the higher taxes. Somewhere it's got to give for everybody.
So when you have been out this particular round, knocking on doors and talking to people about this, what is the general consensus you've run into?
Well, I truly believe we as a general public are probably getting to the point of being taxed out. That's all we hear about, whether it's national news, state news, or local news. It's tax this, tax that, so on. And I'm sure you feel the same way as I do. With that being said, I think that people see the need. I think they know the need, especially if you live in that area. That's going to directly affect. As I talk to the farmers, there's some big farmers out there, and it affects them with all that going on with the farmlands. But the people that live in that area was like, we should have had this years ago. But the fact of the matter, Caledonia Village had all the firemen lived in the village, and so it was easier to go one way instead of two ways. But the need's there. We've had some good talks. And some people are just honest. I can't afford it. And that's fine. That truly is. But just to go to the poll and just to stamp a no on everything, I really would like for you to reconsider and see what you're getting. You're physically buying something. You're buying your safety. You're buying saving your life. And you're going to see it. It's not like you're going to Myers and paying $100 and you walk out with an empty cart. That's not going to be the case. You're going to get a response, and a quick response, and a guaranteed response.
I have a twofold question here, one in regard to the levy and then one in just regard to your job in general. How has social media and news sites regarded a levy like this? Because we see what's been put out there, and how do you see that?
Well, social media today is so, it's easy to hide behind a Facebook page, and I'm not an Instagrammer, I'm not a Twitter, and I'm on Facebook to kind of monitor the department's Facebook page, stuff like that. But it's real easy to sit behind the computer and talk all day long. And then as far as, the local news, I think you're the only local news around. Truly, there's, and I hate to say that, but I mean, I've called other news media and try to get us in the local news or whatever. And I can't believe that nobody's taking on that. And I have gotten a response as of yesterday about doing something like that. But my point when I called and made a complaint was there's 7 out of 10 departments in this county that have fire levies on. And as I posted on our Facebook page from First Consolidated, no matter where you live, these fire levies, that's your safety. And believe me, I've been on calls where nobody showed up for 20, 30 minutes. That's not a good place to be. And it's not a good place for me to be trying to help somebody who's been there for that long wanting help. So it really impacts everybody's lives in this whole county, and we're so short-staffed everywhere. But I wish we did have more news. We had an incident last week, and I gave you a press release there, or a few weeks ago, I think it has been now. None of that's in the paper. None of the serious car crashes we go on, and I think that hurts the fire departments all around Marion County, the city. The city's going on thousands and thousands of calls. People think, well, I see an ambulance running down the road. Okay. But you don't see the impact of that, that car crash or that house fire that's devastating. We just hear the after effects of it, where I can remember 10, 15 years ago, we would have a photographer on every scene we went on, and the fire department got the, and I don't want to say publicity, but it's just a fact of life that if we're out of sight, we're out of mind type thing. And I think people forget about that until they have to call 911, and then here you are waiting. And now you're wondering why you're waiting.
I think it's an important thing. That's an important point to make, because I think, well, in the particular case we talked about, which was the issue in Caledonia, there was a perception that arose from that because it wasn't reported anywhere. But and the idea was, well, the fire department's trying to hide something here. But you tried to report it. It just wasn't being reported. The news organizations made a choice not to do that.
Correct. And again, press releases and things like that, and I'll be honest with you, Scott, we've never done that. We truly have never. It was something new, and as we spoke on the phone, I had to research that. What do I do? What can I and can I not put in it? Because we've truly never had to do that, because we've always had reporters around to be able to do that. So we released it, and you're right. With Facebook, you know, of course, there was, you know, two or three deputies at the scene. There was a couple state fire marshal units on scene. The fire department was on scene, and we were probably there for 4 or 5 hours. And in a little town of Caledonia, the Facebook was heated. The Facebook got roaring, and it turned into bad. And it was an accident. There was no drugs or alcohol involved. It is still an ongoing investigation, and I'd love to be able to tell you more, and there'll be a time where I can tell you more, and I will. But it was truly, at this point, we did get some lab results back from the fire marshal's office yesterday, actually, and it come back, and it was, at this point, it was purely an accident. And the child's recovering. He's got a long road ahead of him. I mean, he's probably going to be down there in the burn unit for quite some time.
And this was, for people who don't know, this was the young boy in Caledonia. I guess it's been about a month now, 3 weeks, a month ago, that was burned over 30% of his body. And the stories that came out after, I mean, we can talk about the stories that we saw, which were all drug-related. That's right. What people thought, because it was on Facebook and it wasn't being reported in the news. And there wasn't a kernel of truth in that part of it.
Zero. Absolutely zero. Had nothing to do with any of that. And it's so sad that, you know, when you see things like that, it's always about drugs. It's always about that. And I like to think I travel fairly regularly, and anytime we travel, I always pick up a newspaper, and my 13-year-old daughter's always like, "Dad, why you get the newspaper and you can read it online?" Well, there's some value in that newspaper to read when you go to other places, other cities. They have the same problems we do. They're fighting the same epidemic as we are. We're no different than any other town in the USA, but this is our town, and we need to stop that. We need to promote good news. And our cops, our sheriff's department, our police department, they're doing a fabulous job. They're doing a great job, and they need to be commended for that, you know. And we are bringing it, we are coming together more and more. There's a lot of good things in Marion happening. We're you know, as you were speaking the other day on the station, we're getting some new restaurants. We're getting, you know, yeah, it's not the Italian place that everybody wants.
It's not the Olive Garden that everybody
wants. It's not the Olive Garden everybody wants, but I mean, we are getting things. We are growing a little bit. We do have a job shortage. We're at the lowest unemployment rate in American history right now. We're just short on jobs. And we've got great factories. We're expanding. And going into this, Scott, when we did this levy, started doing some stuff, we reached out to Myers and Menards and we started getting population statistics on our population in First Consolidated grows 600 to 750% a day, depending on it. You know, Myers gave us some daily traffic, estimated 5,500 to 10,000 people daily at Myers. 3,600 transactions. I mean, 3,600 transactions a day is their average. On weekends and holidays, that goes up. And you living around that neighborhood, you see that traffic. There's 30,000 vehicles a day traveling 95 from 23 to 98. That's tremendous. Menards, their average weekday transactions 4,000. Their weekend transactions are 9,100. That's just transaction. Well, when you go to Menards and Myers, you just don't see mom or dad by themselves there's usually one or two, if not a family of three or four together. And so those populations could be anywhere from 8,000 to 12,000 people a day just at Menards. Mm. And those numbers are staggering. When we do, you know, we've estimated there's about 28,000 people a day that come to the First Consolidated Fire District. We have the largest industrial center in Marion County, the Marion Industrial Center. They have over 250 employees. There's 300 acres, 2 miles long, 6 miles of rail line underneath there. We just built an overpass. You know, I don't say we didn't, but, you know, the state just built an overpass to alleviate a traffic congestion there. There's a lot of things. And we can't forget about Monell Mills out in Martell, very large facility. It's the largest dry bulk plant in the world. And I don't think people understand that. And if you, there's probably a lot of people on the station that's never even been to Martell, to be honest with you. But when you drive to Martell and you see Monell Mills out there, it's like going west of Marion and seeing Whirlpool. It's a very large facility. And that's a lot of responsibility on us, the fire department, when it comes to that.
What happens in the county right now, per se, if there is a fire at Meyer, or there's an issue at Meyer where the fire department needs to go, and then while they're there, a call comes in and there's a private home issue? Do we have the resources at this point to deal with something like that as quick as we need to?
It would be a delayed response for sure. So you kind of two-folded your question there. Is if it's a fire at Myers, it would probably be out of the county ambulance helping the next call, a squad helping the other call, that second call. When Myers is on fire, you got to think there's going to be, you know, Waldo, Pleasant, Marion City, Marion Township, Salt Rock up in Morrill, all 5, 6, 7 departments are going to be there pretty easy. And then if it's of any type of a fire other than a small fire, it's probably going to have all 10 fire departments there, plus we'll have Allen County departments there. So at that point, yes, that call moves on down the line to who's next. And the who's next is never ending. It can go on forever. But what happens with that never ending is how long is it going to take them to get to you?
Well, this is interesting, and I told this story off the air when I knew I was going to have you on today, and I think it's worth telling on the air in this particular situation because it's been less than a year. I live in this district, and last Thanksgiving night I had a fire in my oven, and I've told this story. But now here was the interesting thing about it. Of course, I dialed 911 like any person would do because the house was engulfed in smoke and there was some fire involved. And just so happens, because that night is, I live closer to Meyer than I live to the fire station, and the being a busy shopping night, there just happened to be an officer positioned at Meyer who heard the call and had a fire extinguisher in their trunk. And of course, they got to my house quicker than the fire department, because you've talked about the times that it's going to take. And he went in before the fire department was able to get there. And I often think, I mean, it didn't turn into a big fire, thank goodness. It didn't spread anywhere. But I thought, boy, if it had, and it wasn't Thanksgiving night, and he hadn't been there with a fire extinguisher in his trunk and went in. You know, I thought about that, too. He just went right in. Didn't skip a beat. Whoosh, right in there. I'd already ran out. I was gone. So that's an issue. It made me think about it.
Sure. And thankfully, he was at the right place at the right time, because you didn't suffer a lot of damage other than smoke and some fire extinguisher residual and, of course, your stove.
Right.
But the oven. But it is. The unselfish acts that the first responders do, whether it's law or fire, in this county, we're truly blessed in this county for the dedication of the people who do our jobs. We really are. Mm.
The people who came that night, I just will never, because this is Thanksgiving night, and it was a silly thing that I had did, or that happened with the oven. I really don't know yet. Nobody's ever told me, but you know, everybody and put the fans in there. Now, that's something I didn't realize the fire department did, because I would have had to have gone and stayed somewhere else that night. The house was engulfed in smoke, and opened up the windows for me and put these gigantic exhaust fans in and didn't leave until everybody made sure that I was okay and the smoke was out of the house. You know, these are what you guys do. This is very important, I think, to know, for because a lot of people don't have a fire and they don't know this is done.
So one of the things that I, you know, we try to instill in all the guys, the rookies and so on and so forth, we're helping you when you call 911 at that moment in time is the worst moment of your life. In 5 minutes from now after you call 911 and it's over with, it might be the most silliest thing, kind of like your situation, yeah, yeah. Right? It was just a sheer accident and it happened. But if we're there in your worst moment in time, what can we do to help you? And Scott, to take 10 minutes out of our time, could we went on another call when we was helping you? Absolutely. We could have left those fans in your door, windows open. Scott, we got another call. We'll be back, buddy. Yeah. Right? We could have very simply done that. But for that moment, our focus is you. Our focus is, how do we make Scott more comfortable in the situation he's in to getting back on the normal day, a normal routine? You know, you wouldn't believe the call. We can sit here and talk all morning about the calls we go on, and from toilets being plugged up to bats in the house to I can tell you all kinds of silly stories over the years, and there's probably not a fireman that couldn't tell you some silly stories. But at the moment, when you're an 80-plus person and there's a bat buzzing around your ceiling in your house, you can't handle that. And at that moment in time, that's the worst thing of her life. And we go in there, we capture the bat, and we throw him outside, and she's happy. And we talk, and we go on. That's what we do, Scott. We try to make it better, the best we can make it, in the worst time at the moment of your life.
Well, and it's interesting, and I'll never forget, after all that had went on and the smoke was being taken out of the house so I could stay there that night, because there was no structural damage beyond just the and they set the you guys set the oven out back for me, which is a nice thing. I wouldn't have wanted to move that thing. And I remember before you guys left, somebody came up to me and just said, "Are you okay?" before you left. Now, obviously, they knew I wasn't burned or anything, but I think it was just mentally stressfully, are you okay? You know, we don't want to leave you, you know, erratic at this point. And that's very important.
It is. And in today's training, you know, mental health is a huge part of our society today. We hear that nationally, state, locally, we hear that. But again, to me, that's the friendship. That's the genuinely we care aspect of our job. Are you sure you're okay? Do you need anything? And Scott, if you'd have said, "I just need a place to sit down," we'd have got you a place to sit down. You know what I mean? We would have done anything for you at that moment. If we would have had to remove you from the home, we would have called Red Cross. Red Cross is a great asset in this county. And again, I don't think very many people use it, but those that who have used it say that was the greatest thing that happened that night as well, because they make it comfortable. They make it better for them at that point.
I can speak to this firsthand. Something I wanted to get to, this hour is going by too fast. We're going to have you in again, because it's an interesting subject that I don't think most people realize. But I think it's been less than a year ago now, and I think this also was one of those cases where, holy moly, I think it was between Christmas and New Year's, the old 29 Brew Pub. Oh, yeah. Man, what a fire that was. Yeah. What do we know about that now, and how were you guys able to respond to a fire of that size?
So that fire happened in Pleasant Township, and as you know, I'm also the fire chief of Pleasant Township Fire Department now, or I have been for quite some time. Again, we don't handle these fires alone. Pleasant only has two guys on duty overnight, four guys during the day. First Consolidated, we only have four or five guys on duty. You can't handle it by yourself. There's not a fire department in the county that can handle a fire of that magnitude by themselves. So as your house, we had Fort Morrow out of Waldo, Pleasant, Marion Township, Marion City, in First Consolidated coming to your house. The loft fire, that was considered a commercial structure. So we had those same departments plus Battle Run, which is Prospect, and Green Camp coming. So we had seven departments going on that loft fire. I think we had about 30 firemen on the scene out of seven departments. Turnout was good that night. What we do know is, it's kind of interesting. That's kind of very interesting story, because the insurance kind of just wrote it off, so the investigation kind of stops. But what we believe started it was electrical. There was some switch. There was some employees that stated the lights were flickering a couple weeks before on a dimmer switch. So those type things, but it was so involved. And once it's involved to a point, the fire department will say, we're pulling out, and we just kind of contain it. We won't send firemen's lives. We have a saying in the fire service, we will risk a lot to save a lot. We will risk little to save little. And that's one of those things where, or we risk nothing to save nothing. At that point, it was nothing. The building was vacant. As you know, it's been a barn since 1911, I believe that barn was built in 1911. And then actually in 1937, it was turned into a restaurant. And it had been a restaurant ever since. So it's still a barn. If you went there, it was a beautiful barn, too. It was a beautiful loft up there. That was like a match in a tender box, right? That's exactly what happened. And who knows, you know, they were open that night. They left. They shut the lights off. The lights had been flickering for the day down the one hallway. And that was the origin of the fire down the one hallway. And then a couple hours later, we get called or whatever, and that's what we ended up doing for the next 10 hours.
I can imagine that was something. We do want to let people know again in our last minute here that this is a capital improvement levy, First Consolidated Fire, and it's going to cut down your response time by a lot, 10 minutes. It's going to give you a new fire station out on 98. And that's a big deal. And when we're talking about mills, just remember this, if nothing else, it's $36 a year on your property tax. $36 a year. You know, divide that down to what it would even be a month. That's not a whole lot of money for a quicker response time. And if you're having a stroke, if you're having a heart attack, or even a fire, time means something. That's a room in your house. That's life and death.
That is life and death.
Life and death. Boy, can't thank you enough, Fire Chief, First Consolidated Fire, Clint Canterbury, for coming in this morning. Best of luck next week, and I thank you for listening, and I thank you for last Thanksgiving night, and I thank you for coming in today.
Thank you, Scott.
We'll be back in 10 minutes with the amazing Kreskin. He walked away even before the question was finished.
You know, I can't explain that, and